Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Wednesday, 2nd of December, 2020. We have interesting market developments, especially in treasuries. We'll get to that in a moment. Not sure what market reacting so strongly to there. I suppose it's the sort of louder drumbeat now of stimulus news. It appears we have a bipartisan effort in the Senate to put together something along the lines of a $900 billion stimulus deal. And you know, the bipartisan aspect of that is the most intriguing. That would include $300 billion for these paycheck protection and something like $250 billion for state and local aid. Meanwhile, it appears that Republican Majority Leader McConnell is still pursuing his own smaller deal, very, very limited, and a lot of portions of that the Democrats absolutely hate. So I'm not sure that can get done. The market seems to be taking the bit in its teeth and running with it on this, especially in the Treasury market. And again, we'll get to that in a moment, but the equity market, fairly positive, but not exactly shooting the lights out. Peter, what are you picking up on in the equity market? Also the flat session overnight in Asia.
Yeah. So good question. I think the market is just taking a pause. I mean, we cannot be up aggressively every day. So, I mean, there's the ebb and flows of the equity market and risk sentiment. And that's right now we just flat. I mean, we actually slide it down in Europe, but I think, the reaction function was quite interesting yesterday because we had that news, John, before the cash market opened in U.S. equities, that supposedly we're getting almost $1 trillion fiscal deal done in Congress, and the market actually sold off in equities. I think the deal number that was being rumored was $925 million or something like that. Billion, and not a trillion, and that maybe the headline itself psychologically took the market down, but then it reversed course, and we had a pretty interesting session in the Nasdaq, as you can see on slide two, with the most interesting aspect being the fact that the U.S. yields, as you pointed out, John, actually rose nine basis points. It was the biggest move since November 9, and we've been talking about the U.S. technology stocks and high growth, high duration equities. Are quite sensitive to interest rate changes, but that was not what we saw yesterday. So we have to wonder what this really reflects. And as you and I talked about before we went on this podcast, I mean, it does seem a little bit odd that these yields are still below 1%, given the economic activity that we're actually observing. You know, container rates are highest levels in a decade, and PMI figures are actually quite elevated. We got that number again yesterday in the US. We have surprises out of Asia. The cover is where it is. It just seems a little bit strange. But otherwise, in equities, I think we're still in a bull market. We're still bit risk sentiment is strong, and I'm just looking at next year's dividend futures. They actually had their crazy months in November together with the rest of equities, and we actually almost recovered fully in expectations for dividends next year compared to where we were before the pandemic started.
Yeah, and they ignored yesterday's move in yield, but we're still range bound. Let's look at slide three there, that U.S. 10-year Treasury benchmark. It really is key stuff here. We're seeing quite a strong advance. I was also speculating when we were talking earlier that whether some of the sort of resilience in treasuries and those still sort of range, very low range bound yields for the last few trading days of the month might've been about rebalancing after this incredible month for equities last month. But we saw that big sell-off but the big rally in treasuries that took yields lower in the wake of the US election. And then they spiked back to that near that 1% level on the vaccine candidate news from Pfizer. And now we're starting a new month with this big move. So I would encourage folks to keep at least one eye on treasuries. It really sets things on edge, I believe, if we're starting to see the 10-year benchmark rising above 1%. This is the global price of money. And then the speculation starts to come in. How long is it allowed to advance higher before it impacts, as you mentioned, these equities are so sensitive to yields. And when does it begin to get the Treasury's attention, or sorry, the Fed's attention in terms of potentially capping yield? So it's a spiel we've talked about before, but it's in play suddenly now again with this advance above 90 basis points. The highest close for the cycle is only a couple of 3 basis points higher than where we're trading this morning. So something to keep in mind. And Ola, I guess it was interesting yesterday, we saw a weaker dollar, and I'll talk about that in a moment, but you know, not traditionally, but often you would associate higher yields with gold not doing so well, but the gold market's been upside down lately, and it certainly was not weak yesterday.
No, indeed, John. And I think you talked about nominal yields here. I think it's also important to just talk about the break-even yields, i.e., the inflation expectations for the duration of the bonds. And we did actually see the 10-year break-even break, that the 180% top that we see now four times during the past 17, 18 months. So a bit of a break up there to the upside. And so while the yields are moving higher, it's as we have been discussing recently, as long as they move higher because inflation expectations move higher as well, then it's not too much of a span and it works for gold's potential progress. And it also, I put in on the slide after the yield slide that something that caught a bit of attention yesterday. I put in a slide where I just show the correlation between the gold copper ratio and US 10-year yields. Obviously, when the gold is actually should be called the copper gold ratio because it's copper over gold. But when that ratio goes up, as it has been doing now for the past couple of months, with a very, very strong rally in copper and gold drifting lower, that has basically meant that we've seen a dislocation between the normal correlation between where that ratio goes and where yields are going. So it does raise the question, are yields correct? And if they are at these lower levels, then gold is either too cheap or copper is too expensive. And whether it's probably a combination of all three of them. And now that we're seeing yields picking up a bit, we're actually also seeing the ratio starting to come down a little bit because of the weaker dollar yesterday. Did actually give gold quite a bit of a boost. Looking at the chart the gold chart on the same slide, you can see that 1817 level was the resistance that we struggled to break yesterday. And as we speak and record this podcast, we're trading up above. We're currently at 1824. So we are breaking higher now. And that basically brings in 1850 as the next key level. I think if we break above 1850, then this correction is potentially over.
All right, and then you mentioned the dollar, and I've got on slide five, the euro dollar. No secret here, pull up your euro dollar chart. It's blasted above 120 yesterday. I wonder if that just clearing that 120 level really encouraged a lot of order flow because the euro dollar move looked a bit out of sync with what was going on in other dollar pairs. You're not seeing major new lows in the dollar versus the Chinese renminbi. You had some fellow travelers. Sterling is up a little bit. Together against the dollar, but euro sterling is actually quite elevated, and we saw that 0.90 level break there. So looking a little bit lonely, I want to see some confirmation from other dollar pairs here. Again, I think it's the 120 break, the stimulus news or hoped for stimulus news potentially providing some of the impetus here. There are also some words from the ECB Schnabel, but I'm not sure if we can take much out of those about maybe discouraging too many expectations into next week's ECB meeting. But this certainly this 120 move needs to hold to encourage the outlook for the 125 plus high test. That's the range that's from the early 2018 highs in Eurodollar. But circling it back around, and, oh, by the way, there's one news item. I don't know where to segue it in or fit it in here. I just wanted to flag it. A New York Times, I'm not sure if I think they had more access to the origins of the story. There it was flagged and other news sources from Bloomberg, for example, as a New York Times story, but that Biden does not plan to roll back any of the Trump tariffs, initially at least, when he takes office, and there'll be a thorough review of the trade policy. And just, there's so many articles out there you can access looking at how it does appear we're going to see a lot of continuation, that one of the few areas where there is bipartisan agreement is on a very different stance to China than was the case prior to Trump. So it will be a key issue. I think we'll get a lot of attention as we transition to the Biden presidency. Back to the day-to-day. Well, we've got some interesting M&A stories out there. At least certainly one getting the most attention right now is this Slack acquisition by Salesforce. Peter, take us through what's going on and the remarkable valuation that's in play here.
Sure. So Salesforce reported fiscal year 21. They're not following the calendar year, Q3 earnings. Yesterday, and the shares were down 5%. And it certainly wasn't due to the numbers. I mean, the earnings per share were almost twice as high as expected by the market. They beat on revenue, and they even, as I indicate with the red lines on slide six on the insert, they even increased their guidance for revenue for the current fiscal year. And it was all due to this acquisition, as you talked about, Slack Technologies, $27.7 billion in terms of enterprise value. That has to be stacked against a little bit more than a billion, I think 1.1 billion in revenue expected in 2 years' time from now for Slack. So that's a pretty hefty forward valuation on Slack's revenue right there. And it's not like Slack is hugely profitable, but Mark Benioff, being the salesman he is, said on a Bloomberg interview, or otherwise it was on the conference call, as you can see, that's the last or the first top of the red lines I've marked there. He said it's a marriage made in heaven, and what he's really referring to there, I don't know, but of course there'll be a lot of duplicated or redundant resources inside Slack. I mean, Slack doesn't really need its own Salesforce, I guess, and a lot of back office and accounting things can be removed when they are merged into the Salesforce group. So obviously there will be a lot of synergies right there. And a lot of commentaries out there commentators have been saying that this is really a powerful move by Salesforce, as it really, you know, it puts together some piece of software that makes Salesforce going right against the Microsoft dominance in enterprise software. So it seems like there's a battle heating up there between those two.
All right. And then in the energy space, you got a couple slides here, Ola, slide 7 and 8. And looking at the couple of headlines you pulled out there, it looks like you're concerned about forward demand. I like this one here. You've got the COVID pandemic could cut business travel by 36%. Permanently. So take us through what you want to point out there. And then on issue I raised yesterday with positioning in the futures market, where there's this odd large short out there and these unclassified traders.
Yeah, so this slide 7 for perspective here. We talked about this potential big value rotation, and November was a huge earthquake in the equity factors land, with value stocks gaining momentum, growth declining a lot. And as you know, I've been saying it repeatedly from day one, I'm quite skeptical about this rotation for the time being. And the rotation was very heavily in energy, as you can also see on the price chart. So energy sector versus global equities really shot higher there in November, but it's actually been down 7% on a relative basis from the local peak over the past week or so. And there's just some interesting headlines coming out on Wall Street Journal this morning. And the one you mentioned here is that it's estimated that somewhere between 19 and 36% of all business trips could actually be disappearing, as you know, the pandemic has forced companies to adopt digital solutions to sales meetings, etc. And it's actually just bloody efficient, and it's much more efficient than putting people for days in an airplane and hotels. They save a lot of money, and it is just more efficient. And so if that's the level that is permanently gone, that goes straight into lower oil demand. And then also another story that Wall Street had is that the return to office, this is one of the big unknowns, not only in Europe, but it's certainly in the US. You have this small insert on slide 7 where you can see the percentages of US workers that have returned to the office. I mean, it's just depressing, right? We're below 20% again, and we have declined quite rapidly over the past couple of weeks as the COVID-19 pandemic has accelerated again in the US. So I'm actually beginning to doubt my own. We have constantly been saying, John, that if we go above 1% or 1.1% in yields, then we'll see a big shift in the value, and it's a big signal on energy and financials, etc. But at least for energy, I think we probably have to look at some other indicators than the yield. It probably goes for financials, but not for energy. I'm very skeptical about the whole energy sector, to say the least.
And it obviously just raised the question of this 20% rally now we saw in crude oil prices during November. How much of that is justified at this point in time? And I think a lot of that will really be, I think there's no doubt that the recovery, the story has been one where Mark is trying to look ahead to the to 21 and the arrival of the vaccine and the pickup in fuel demand. And those comments you mentioned there, Peter, is obviously raising some doubts about which extent we can return towards normality next year. So, but in the short term, that is one for 21. But the short term dilemma for OPEC is really that we're starting to see a bit of a this court between this unity between between some of the major players. UAE is clearly not happy about extending production cuts for another 3 months. So the meeting was postponed. OPEC Plus meeting was postponed until tomorrow. If they fail to reach an agreement, then we could see a $5 slump in the oil market. Also considering that we've seen some like 180 million barrel net increase in the speculative long in Brent and WTI since the vaccine announcement on November 9th. So so clearly a critical couple of days here for the oil market, at least for the short-term outlook. Today is the focus on the stock report. Yesterday, the market received some bad news from API, the American Petroleum Institute, basically saying that the crude oil stocks and gasoline stocks both rose by more than expected last week. EIA will report later today at 3:30 GMT. And that, I think, especially gasoline stocks and gasoline demand, it really is important at this stage. And that obviously also come back to what you just talked about, Peter. So that will be the key focus today. But then there's another conundrum. I think you mentioned on the broadcast or the podcast yesterday, John, when I was not there, that there was one headline that caught a bit of attention this past couple of days, because we do report these weekly speculative data called the COT report, commitment of traders. We tend to focus only on the speculative part of that, the equation, i.e. hedge funds, CTAs, and what have you. But there are obviously also other factors that creates the total open interest in a market. And Brent crude caught the imagination yesterday, because you can see on the slide here, the blue line is called other reportables. That is now, there's now a short position in among other reportables of 400 million barrels. And the question is obviously, who are they? Because they're obviously losing their shirt right now, unless they are hedged against something else. I haven't got an answer to what it is, but I think at the same time, it's worth noting that producers and merchants, which is the red line, they tend to be short because they're hedging their forward production. Their short has been dwindling while the blue, i.e. the order report, has been going higher towards bigger negatives. So I think there are maybe some potential issues with regards to how they break down the different categories. And just finally, it's on this one as well. The swap dealers, it's the yellow line. Swap dealers, who are they? Well, they are banks who quote swaps to potentially producers, again, who wants to hedge their position. So a producer come and say, I want to hedge my 21 production, X amount of barrels per month. They quote a swap. And in order to cover that swap, they go in and sell in the futures market. So the swaps are actually long 400 million, which to me doesn't make sense, because normally, especially we see that in WTI, they will be short because they're hedging potentially the production from the producer. So I think the Brent crude is, they have some issues in regards to how the report things.
Ole, you're breaking up from my side. So I think we'll leave it there. And Peter, sorry to cut you off. If you come back on, you can flag it. Peter, take us through the earnings we're looking for today. The Snowflake has been generating a lot of interest, and then tomorrow with DocuSign.
Yeah, it's a small comment here. Snowflake is the big one to look for in today's earnings releases, and it's important because it was sort of the first, at least I remember, one of the first technology IPOs that Berkshire Hathaway is were participating. I think they bought almost $700 million worth of this IPO in Snowflake, and it's up more than 200% since its IPO price. So that has been a pretty good deal, a $1.5 billion in profit or so for Berkshire Hathaway, so that they pay some bills. But otherwise, it's one of those cloud infrastructure companies in focus, as I said before, because it's not one of the major three. So Amazon Web Services, Google Cloud, and Microsoft Azure. So it's sort of a little bit more the underdog here, but it's growing rapidly and is really loved by a lot of the technology experts in the industry. So it will be very interesting to watch that one. And DocuSign we'll talk about tomorrow in that preview. Yeah, and otherwise, we might mention, I haven't marked it with red, but you have a couple of cybersecurity stocks, CrowdStrike, Splunk, and Zscaler, which we'll report today as well. It's cybersecurity is a very fascinating and interesting and fast-growing segment or theme in the equity market. So, and one of those that we also tracking. So, it's if you're exposed to that segment, it's probably worth having a look at those three companies tonight.
All right, and then that takes us to the macro calendar. You can see that one on slide 11 in today's slide deck. The main focus will be on Powell again, although it was pretty weak stuff yesterday. Both Powell and the Secretary of Treasury Mnuchin were out before a Senate panel, and pretty friendly wording between those two. And basically, the agreement seemed to be that the Treasury was happy to take that money that's from those programs that the Fed were being underutilized by the Fed and using that money for stimulus and grants rather than for loans, if possible. But there was no sort of anything hinting at the stance going into the December FOMC meeting. Let's see if anything comes up today. Don't have my hopes up high, but I think the market is a little bit hopeful that something is forthcoming from the Fed. So whether that can hold back the dollar, if they don't deliver in December, that I think will be the last sort of key question for the dollar heading into the end of the year. And then we have the ADP employment change out today. I never know what to do with that because we have the official non-farm payrolls up on Friday and the Fed's beige book where they comment on the different regions and how they feel the economy in those regions is doing. And then tomorrow we're starting tonight in the Asian session, we kick off all of the November services PMIs, starting with China and the rest of Asia and following through tomorrow and across Europe and then with the US ISM services. It'd be interesting to see the state of that figure now that we have this renewed COVID resurgence in the US, but it doesn't seem that economic data is being held back terribly, although we did see a weak October retail sales number in the US. So if we get a number that spooks the market, it could be interesting to see how that is absorbed yesterday, given all the sort of positivity in general. And just given the whole awkwardness of, yes, we know COVID-19 is locking everything down increasingly right now, but we're all hoping for vaccine and for a strong resurgence come spring. So the market, often operates more on expectations than current reality anyway. But for now, I think we really need to just keep at least one eye on the U.S. Treasury market, that 100 basis point level on the U.S. 10-year benchmark. Apologies to you, Ola, for cutting you off. I'm not sure if you're there or your connection is good again, but we'll follow up on the grain markets, which you were going to discuss as well today, perhaps in tomorrow's podcast. For now, thanks for listening today, and we will be back tomorrow with the Saxo Market Call.